Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Marius Ruart. Let's get into our first news story of today. And it seems an awful lot on the show like we're talking about foreign politics and foreign policy, which is a big change, I think, for how South Africans are used to things going. And it kind of turns out, I think, that South Africa really, really doesn't have a proper grasp of its foreign policy. Now, I think this is kind of to be expected, considering that government has fallen down in a lot of areas. But I think the lack of attention to this has kind of hidden how government has just not really had a great plan for how to deal with South Africa's, with the turbulent waters on the global stage, let's put it that way. And this was really well illustrated by an opinion piece by Jabulani Sikhukane, who Marius tells me, I believe, is a former government spokesperson. Who wrote a piece titled, Did Government Think Before It Poked the Israeli Bear? And I think this piece is really worth dwelling on for a second. It starts, if you are in the habit of poking bears, you should at the very least think things through, especially when the kind of bears you go for are prone to serious toothache. South Africans' decision to go for Israel over its bombing of Gaza is one such act of poking bears. This column is not about the correctness or otherwise of the decision, but whether the South African government thought through its decision. That is, did it consider all possible effects, implications, blowbacks, a balance that is required by its foreign policy framework? Regarding SA's charge against Israel, if they expected Israel to sort of roll over and say, tickle me, that outcome was out of the equation. What other possible reactions by the Israelis and its allies did the SA government consider? If retaliatory steps by Israel and its allies were considered, did SA dismiss these as unlikely? If not, what mitigating steps did the South African government put in place? Surely a country whose state of government finances is the worst in almost 30 years, has huge socioeconomic backlogs, and whose economy hasn't grown at a pace that's fast enough for it to generate resources required to address the backlog, should think things through before poking bears. And I think this is a really important point. Everyone gets caught up in the decision of whether South Africa should have taken Israel to the International Court of Justice. Let's put that aside to a second and look at this from a sort of pure governance perspective. If you decide you're going to do this, you need a plan. You need to say, okay, here's the allies we can get in the world to back us up. Here's how we will mitigate complaints against us from those who might be angry. Here's counter arguments we have ready on the international stage to counter criticisms of us. Here's money we have available to fight efforts to delegitimize us. Here's alternative trade deals and contacts. There is absolutely no evidence that South Africa prepared anything like that. And now I think we're seeing the negatives, which is that Israel has helped to ally its ally, has helped to lobby its ally, the United States, to come down heavily on us. That's definitely part of the reason why the US has been taking such a tough line with South Africa recently. And we're sort of fumbling around now, claiming that we need to go around the world and, quote unquote, explain South Africa's position. Marius, what do you make of all this?
Yeah, I mean, as I was saying before the show, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face. And I think South Africa did get punched in the face, yeah? Because, yeah, we didn't think what's going to happen once we go through this. And, you know, even if you agree with the decision to go to the ICJ, you got to ask about South Africa's kind of stance on other international conflicts. South Africa loves to turn a blind eye when there have been other human rights abuses around the world. The President Ramaphosa met with the head of the Rapid Support Forces, who's busy fighting in Sudan. There's pretty good evidence they are committing genocide right now. But President Ramaphosa was happy to meet with them at his official residence in Pretoria. We didn't say anything about the election that was probably stolen in Mozambique. We've never put any pressure on Eswatini to reform, become more democratic. We've kept quiet about another pretty dodgy election in Namibia, which was just the end of last year as well. You know, we haven't said we've been on Russia's side with the invasion of Ukraine. We're actually not really on the side of human rights until, for some reason, the South African government is obsessed with what's happening in Palestine, which is all fine. But we obviously didn't think our decision through, and we kind of paying the we we carrying the consequences for it now. But I do think what we need to point out about this article from Jabulani Sigekane, which I think is very important. You mentioned at the beginning of the show, he's a former spokesperson for the Finance Minister, National Treasury, and the South African Reserve Bank. So this isn't a guy, you know, who's never been involved with the government. You know, he was a spokesperson for some pretty important institutions. So, I mean, maybe this is kind of a silver lining in this cloud. Maybe there is some sensible thinking within the government. Not that Sigekane is still in the government, but there's probably people who, you know, who think along the same lines as him who are there. So maybe cool heads will prevail in this current spat between us and the USA, which is completely self-inflicted as well.
I saw the president's spokesman recently saying that South Africa was represented in huge numbers of, or we had missions all over the world. We were second only to the US, in fact. And this was sort of proof that South Africa was some sort of great diplomatic player on the global stage. And I think this is kind of playing into this, is there's a complete misunderstanding of our position on the global stage. I think the ANC is perhaps lying to itself. It's very clear that a lot of those diplomatic missions we don't need and instead are essentially sort of patronage opportunities. You know, you go and put a cadre who you don't really want to put him in government or in parliament because maybe he'll do some damage because he's not the best. But, you know, we'll put him as a diplomat somewhere. That can't hurt. At embassies around the world, we have embassies where you have a limited number of people who can speak the local language. You have limited amount of the ability to actually influence policy. We're not getting anything from all these embassies all over the world. This should have, this should be an advantage when we decide to pick a fight with a very tough country like Israel, and yet we don't have anything prepared. And I think this is an area of South African politics that also perhaps the opposition in general, or not the opposition, but the other major parties, the DA, the smaller GNU parties, the true opposition parties, need to pick up on, is foreign policy matters. And we're seeing that right now. And it's been left for far too long to be ignored. Any final thoughts from you, Marius?
Yeah, I mean, South Africa, as you said, doesn't really have a foreign policy. And if there is one, it's just a kind of knee-jerk one. I think what happens is, what would our foreign policy be if we imagine it's still 1985 and we are, you know, still fighting the struggle? And it's like, okay, cool, that's what we'll do. There's been no real thought, you know, this is a new world. The United States isn't our adversary anymore, whatever the case is. We need to be much more clever with our diplomacy. We need to look at what countries like Turkey and India are doing. You know, they're not beholden to the United States or anybody, but they're also not opponents of the United States. And they, you know, they do what's best for the country. And I'm not sure that our foreign policy often is doing what's best for South Africa, actually. I think often our foreign policy, I mean, from what we've seen, has been harming South Africa. And that isn't to say we must always do what the United States does, but also I don't think we should be actively acting against the United States' interests if those interests aren't our interests too. And I think we are often acting against our own interests in our foreign policy.
Right. And as you say, even if the claim is that our foreign policy is some sort of moral stand for human rights, that's not true either, because there is no standard. It's just complete grab bag of sort of random things, whichever the government seems to feel like at the time. Anyway, let's move on to our next story, and this is one of these kind of smaller stories that I think provides a launching point for a larger discussion. An Eastern Cape community has managed to get a court ruling to compel a local municipality to build an access road. There were the two small towns in the Eastern Cape who had this incredibly poor road connecting them, was causing all sorts of problems, including even people when bodies and funerals were being carried across, being basically like jumbled about. The court ruled basically that people's dignity was being impaired. And in what is described in the media as a scathing judgment handed down, the High Court in Mthatha said that, you know, the municipality can't complain about its budget constraints and that it needs to complete this access road and provide services to the community. And Marius, we saw this talked a little bit about in the President's State of the Nation address when he mentioned that his great plan for fixing the South African municipal crisis, and it is a crisis, is to simply reform the funding model. He gave some lip service to increasing the technical skills in municipalities, but there's it's not entirely clear to me how exactly that would work, particularly when the government continues to pursue CADA deployment as a policy. What are your thoughts on the story and just sort of the municipal crisis in general?
Yeah, I think we do need to relook at local government in South Africa. We have to ask if we need wall-to-wall municipalities in South Africa. I'm not sure we do. You know, some places it just doesn't make sense for it really to be a municipality. Maybe it should rather be governed directly from the province. We've also got to ask if these big metro municipalities we have, like places like Johannesburg and Tshwane and Ekurhuleni and obviously other places outside of Gauteng, doesn't make sense for Johannesburg to be governed as one single entity. You know, most municipalities, like big cities around the world, don't have like one single entity that runs it. For example, London is actually, it's got one kind of uni government, but it's also got 32 smaller governments, 32 boroughs that run London. And I'm not sure of the exact number of population in those places, but I mean, be much smaller. One of the 32 boroughs isn't going to have as many people as Joburg, for example. So I think we really have to relook at how local government works in South Africa. We really have to look at the funding model. And I think it's a problem with a lot of local municipalities, especially in rural areas. They simply can't sustain themselves. They won't have large business, or they won't have enough people who have decent incomes to be able to pay rates and taxes. Yeah, so... And so, as I say, does it make sense for these places to actually be able to govern themselves? Maybe they should be governed from the provincial capital, or maybe even from Pretoria itself. But then it's all got kinds of other questions. We also, decentralization is often better, but, you know, not maybe all the time. So, yeah, this is, I think there's a lot of stuff we need to think about with this. And this story now from the Eastern Cape just shows how local government in South Africa is failing. And it's just, you know, it's not a new story. It's very much a dog bites man story, not a man bites dog story.
No, exactly right. I think I think I'm a bit more gung-ho for decentralization in general. I think that, as you say, you know, particularly our big metros, there. You look at my favorite example of this is how Johannesburg, if you look at the map of the metropolitan, it sort of makes a lot of sense. It's like sort of almost a rectangle, and then suddenly it sort of juts down south to grab Orange Farm. Which is, you know, a community that is much more, I think, better suited to be in the municipality underneath that, the Vereeniging municipality. I think it's called
Mfuleni. Or Sedibeng.
Sedibeng, that's the one. Yes, sorry, Mfuleni's the other side. But you know, it was included because I think the ANC was worried that you know, it needed more areas where its support was strong. That municipality to keep control of it, and that was quite cynical, and it just doesn't make sense for the governance. I think obviously there should be more space for kind of private interest to get involved in towns, and there are some places in South Africa where that has happened, where, for example, the electricity is run by a sort of private entity that's held accountable by residents. That's worked relatively well, but. You know, the central problem here remains a kind of a general lack of accountability that comes from a dysfunctional political system where too much of our politics is kind of nationalized. You know, people encouraged to vote for the ANC, for example, because of its, you know, what it's doing on the national stage, or maybe because it's, you know, fighting the fight against inequality or something, which actually doesn't really relate too much to local governments. Politicians, I think, aren't always held properly accountable by their communities. There's a lot of divisive politics that goes on, not just on racial lines, but also sometimes on ethnic tribal lines kind of stuff between different groups. And as long as you have this lack of accountability, oh, and of course, when corruption cases come up, they often aren't properly prosecuted. By the police. And as long as you have this general lack of accountability in politics, in criminal stuff, you're going to have dysfunction. Even if we perfect the funding models, as you suggest, you know, there may be room to do in our municipalities, you still have the potential for money to just all get stolen and go missing, even if there is more available. And until we get those accountability problems fixed, we're really not going to be able to sort of move the ball forward on this one.
Yeah, I think we need a change in political culture in South Africa. I think things are changing a bit. People are starting to punish governing parties at the ballot box, but not as much as they should. And sometimes the people that get punished and those who get rewarded aren't always much better than the previous incumbents. So yeah, I think it's does come down to a matter of political culture, and you know, it's the only people who can change this is South Africans. So yeah. That's what we are. There's also only so much that you can rely on the government to do. You also, if you want your municipality to work better, you just got to, I hate to say it, but you got to vote better.
I think there's also a space for, you know, if you don't agree with any of the biggest political parties and you have real space in your local community to start your own thing, if you're going to run for a council or something like that, to stand as an independent in a council, there's space for civil society groups. And I think we've seen this a bit with AfriForum, but you know, there's many other potentials, I think, for this to really get involved and drive local governance concerns, particularly in rural South Africa, where it's ignored often. And we've seen a bit of that in South Africa, but not enough. And I think that stuff does help also to shake up the politics and create a different political culture. Anyway.
Yeah, I think we have seen lots of kind of local interest parties come to the fore, especially the last election. And I think our next election, which is end of 2026 or early 2027, I think, we're going to see even more of these kind of local interest parties. And, you know, maybe those are better. They're going to be more responsive to what communities actually want. But, yeah, let's see what happens.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting phenomenon to watch what happens. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you found this show interesting, and we will be back tomorrow with the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.